Access number 27804, Squadron Leader Ian Blair, Real 20. Now, we were talking about your time with 501 Squadron, and last thing we covered in the last meeting was this dogfight near Abbeville on the 17th of April. Are there any other, I mean, I know you were only with them a month, any other missions or things you remember before things took a turn for the worse?
Yeah. Well, to say a dogfight, it was, it was virtually, I was just following my number one, actually, old Wedge Gleed, and there was black crosses all over the place, and everybody was milling around, and I got a bead on one guy, and I was about to open fire, and another Spitfire cut in front of me, and he clobbered it, I think, in the end. But he was one of these Poles who were bitter and twisted, you know, really. They were, if they saw a black cross, they went out. Anyway, to cut the long story short, everything went okay. I mean, I fired my guns at this guy, never hit him. Likewise, Widge did as well. But the squadron formed, and eventually we got back to base, no trouble at all. And that was my first indoctrination into the operations. And a couple of days later, in fact, no, it was the same afternoon, actually, I was on a fighter escort to some Boston aircraft, somewhere over to the Paldicali area, and I noticed here from a logbook there was one aircraft, one bomber was shot down, actually, one Boston lost. I think they were bombing an airfield, I'm not quite sure. But things progressed through the first month, and it wasn't until the 25th of April, the end of the month, that again we were doing a fighter sweep over the the Abbeville area, Cherbourg Peninsula area. It's roughly about 130-140 miles wide there, and we were doing a sweep, and the formation we carried in these days, we used to have 12 aircraft and two sweepers, two freelance tail end Charlies who used to weave at the back of it. But anyway, I think I was one of the weavers, I'm not quite sure now, but as we withdrew from Cherbourg, there was a few bursts of flak in front of me, and I suspect it was either ACAC at long distance, but as we progressed across the channel, my oil temperature went off the clock, and my engine finally packed up. So it was a hazy day, but cloudless, and I was gradually, the squadron were drawing away, as is normal with a lame aircraft. So anyway, the squadron disappeared, and I was left on my own with this engine with the temperatures going off the clock, and eventually I decided that I'd better get out of this aircraft. So I remember calling up the controller and giving a mayday, and the guy more or less said, we've got you on radar, don't abandon aircraft, you're not far from shore. I couldn't see anything at this time in terms of land. Anyway, I was still heading in the right direction for Swanage was, and by the time I got to 5,000 feet, I thought, time to get out, so I jettisoned the hood and pulled the pin out, the D-ring out, and it was at that juncture that the guy came up and said, oh, don't abandon aircraft, you're near base, or was that effect? But so I, like a clot, I suppose, I got myself back in. By that time, I was too low to get out, really, safely. So when I went to strap myself in, no harness pin. You know, it's a triangle, a big triangle. It was attached to the harness by a piece of cord. And of course, in my enthusiasm to get out, I suppose I broke this cord. Anyway, so when I'm strapped in, I had nothing to hold my harness together. And so I thought, it wasn't very funny. So by this time, I could see land, and I picked a field. And I thought it was near enough Swanage, but I've picked this field, and the engine had stopped, seized up by this time. I switched everything off, So I was grinding like the proverbial brick and managed to pick this field, and I made approach on this field and was about to settle down in this field, and lo and behold, when I got within sort of visual distance, there was all these telegraph poles, anti-invasion things, stuck up all over this field. And there wasn't any space, and I thought, well, this is not funny. I haven't got my harness done up, no space. I better go into the next field. So I pulled the stick back and went over the top of these poles and over a hedge and into the next field. But unfortunately, the next field was in a bit of a valley. And so when I got over, I had enough speed to get over the poles and hedges. And when I settled down, I didn't get the stick back quick enough. And I dug in, and the aircraft went base over apex, as the phrase goes. And there I was, upside down, with literally nothing on the clock. And at complete rest. And so I opened the side panel. That's right, I opened the side panel, but I turned a somersault inside the cockpit, so I was the right way up, although the aircraft was upside down. And I was facing the tail, and in my right ear was the control column. And eventually somebody came along and banged on the side of the aircraft and said, "Are you all right?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm okay." I had banged my head, which I found out subsequently, I banged my head naturally enough and cut my hand, and I was upside down. And I said, "Well, if you could just lift the tail up," I said to this guy, "if you just lift the tail up a bit, I'll be able to slide myself out through the side panel." Well, apparently, in retrospect, I found out that this was a young guy who had come along with his father, who was worked in a paving stone yard a few hundred yards away. And these guys had rushed out. I found this out about 50 years later. Rushed out. And being masons, paviors and masons, or paviors, masons, call them which you will, they built from the stones of the dike close by, they built a little plinth to jack the aircraft up. And they gradually lifted the tail up and they built this little square plinth. And the guy told me afterwards, some 50 years, that there was a perfect pillar to hold the tail up. But apparently I was in and out of consciousness. I didn't remember much about it, but I remember the tail going up, and I remember that with the movement of the aircraft, the control column kept banging me in the ear. So I got with my free hand, one hand, I gave this control column a hefty push. And one thing I've forgotten to do was to switch off the firing button. And there was a sharp, sharp burst, as the phrase goes, of 220 mils and four machine guns, and the tail clattered down very, very sharply. And I was back to square one. But fortunately, nobody was injured, although there was a cloud of dust, and they were a bit. I learned afterwards the population weren't very, very keen. But they did, in fact, extricate me from this wreckage. All I remember was I've obviously been in and out of consciousness, because when I got out, I remember slithering out, and then I remember seeing the red crosses of an ambulance. But by that time, they'd put me on a stretcher and carted me some 400 yards up the road. And the guy who I met 50-odd years later said that I was the guy that kept on saying, "Is he all right, Dad? Is the pilot all right, Dad?" Because it was his dad, apparently, that was one of the paviors. And anyway, I got to the ambulance, and I remember the ambulance couldn't get nearer than about 400 yards, and I remember being put in the ambulance. I remember the old lady, who happened to be this young boy's mother, I suppose, yeah, mother, wanting to give me some hot, sweet tea. But the medics wouldn't wear that. They said, "Oh, no way." So, and then I was bundled into this ambulance and taken off to Bovington, which is a military hospital, a tank corps hospital. Bovington. And
you crash-landed near Swanage?
Well, I thought it was Swanage, but it turned out to be Worth-Matravers. And what had happened was that the medics from Worth Matravers, apparently there was two WAFs and an ambulance, had haired up the main road and had dropped the WAFs off with a stretcher at one side of the field, and had the ambulance had to go up and down the main road and down the other side of the field, but he could only get within about 400 yards. This information I gleaned some 50-odd years later, but when I met these rescuers. But the funny bit was that this all transpired because I was driving down this part of the coastline on holiday. It was the 50th anniversary of D-Day, and I came to this signpost which said Worth Matravers, and I thought to myself, you know, the old mine said Worth Matravers, that seems, and I had a photograph in my wallet which my dad took when he came to see me in hospital, but he had visited the site, and the photograph I carried with me, which was then 54 years of age, the skyline was familiar. And so I got this photo and I looked, and I married up the skyline and this long building, and I turned down this road and came to a pub called the Paver's Arms. It was a ye olde worldy pub. It must have been 15th century pub. Really was an old pub. And so I went into this pub and through a tiny little window, I said to the guy, excuse me, could you tell me, showing him this photograph, is that field over there, this particular one on the photograph? And he looked at me. He was about 23 or 4, this guy. And he said to you, why do you want to know? I said, well, a few years ago, I'm sure that's the field I pranged an aircraft in. Oh, he said, my granddad won't be pleased to see you. Which I thought made me feel extremely old. But this guy was a member of the local Aviation Archaeological Society. So I left him my phone, my name and address, and in due course, the guy who, in fact, knocked on the side and kept on asking his dad, he got in touch with me, and another rescuer got in touch with me. So we had a reunion, in inverted commas, on site, and the local television people came down and thought it was 50th anniversary of D-Day, so they thought this was a good copy, and away we went. So that episode, which lasted my time on the squadron was about, well, it was just a month.
And now, I flew. What state were you in?
I had a cut hand and a bat, and I'd been unconscious, concussion, and banged my head. I've got stitches in my head, you know. But in these days, concussion was frowned upon, you know. So I was flat on my back. I think I was flat on my back for 3 weeks in the Bovington Hospital, between Bovington Hospital and what's the other one? The other Holton, not Holton.
Doesn't matter too much.
Yeah, well, yes, it was Holton. Must have been Holton. Up near Swindon somewhere. Scrivenham. I can't really come back.
But they were worried about your concussion more than
Well, they did. They didn't like that at all because I'd been unconscious and it was a few, you know, in and out. But I was whisked off to hospital and there I reclined. I went to Bovington. I was in Bovington a fortnight, Rorton Hospital. And then they moved me by road from Bovington to Rorton by ambulance. Terrible trip, but I had to lay flat on my back. It was a bit of a rough trip. But then I stayed in Rorton for quite a few weeks. It so happened that one of the guys in the ward I remember well was Richard Hillary, the author.
What did you make of him? Because he's very famous. I mean, he wrote the book and
He was actually in hospital in the end, in bed.
Didn't
say much. Didn't know much about him apart from who he was. But that month I flew having just left OTU. I flew that month on the squadron. I did 18 hours 50 operational time out of the total time I was there, which was about 30 hours, I think. Yeah. That was my introduction to operational flying. I got a letter asking me what had happened, and I said, a letter from the squadron that was saying, you know, please explain why. Please explain why. It was obviously for the court of inquiry, but I reckon I had the flak, which came from Cherbourg, as a parting shot, literally. Obviously, it burst close by, and a fragment went through the oil cooler, which resulted in the oil pressure loss and subsequent engine seize up, because we had a long way to go, 100 and some odd miles. It's a long, very wide bit of sea. But the drill was, if that happened, you had to flog the engine till it seized up, literally. That was the drill, so that's what I did. But anyway, to cut a long story short, that's where I finished up. And I was going to say something else there about at that time, but doesn't really accompany me. I was discharged from hospital and with a lower flying category, obviously, A4, G4. And I was off from the hospital from the crash time to the time I returned to operation, which was 11 months. But what I was going to say was, I remember that, in retrospect, I found out by meeting some historian that on that particular day, the squadron lost four additional aircraft, including mine. And I had a visit from the adjutant in the hospital saying, what happened? He said, we lost four aircraft. And you? That's what I don't know. They were all there when I left. And it transpired subsequently from research by a friend of mine that two German ace fighter pilots jumped the squadron after I left, obviously, and shot down these four. I've got the details of them. The guys were, they were aces, you know, oak leaves and clusters. They were in the 100-plus mark. One guy survived the war. One guy was killed in Russia in front, I think. But I got photographs. It's interesting to read it. But that was the only outcome. When I was discharged from hospital, unfit, inverted commas, for operational flying, I went to South Wales as air traffic control duties.
Now, did you do a course first?
No, I did a course after.
Right.
Okay. I had a refresher course, you mean?
Well, there's sort of reference here to...
posted to flying control duties at Angle in South Wales, that's August 42, right? Near the bottom, six lines from the bottom, first page one. Posted non-effective sick.
It says on to GHQ Ibsley, attended short navigation.
Yes, I forgot about that. Yeah, short nav course. That was just a...
Do you remember anything about that?
Short nav course.
Not really, obviously.
Yes, I did. It was held up at Cranage. Yeah, I've got it here. Cranage. Attached area station Cranage for Fighter Command short navigation course from the 22nd of June to the 4th of July. It was just a small course. I was supposed to occupy the fighter pilots, you know, how to navigate one's way around. Because it didn't hold any great...
That was at Cranage, was it?
Yes. I wasn't all that enthusiastic about it because, I mean, I'd done all this in the years beforehand, but I didn't really learn anything. I just was occupying the time between non-effective sick and becoming fit again.
Now, after that, you were made the flying control officer
at RAF Angle. Well, it was, I was a sergeant then. It was flying control duties. It was just a... flying control in these just meant that you sat on the end of the runway with an oldest lamp and you flashed it in if it was okay for the people to land or not to land. It wasn't it sophisticated. And I sat in this caravan in the middle of angle. I don't know whether you know what angle
where
is.
Where is angle? I thought, yes.
Yeah, well, angles on the south side of Haverford, Pembroke Dock, and it's the furthest west piece of ground. It's right on the tip, and I literally mean that, right on the tip of the land. On the north side, across the estuary, some distance away, is Haverford West, which was a big American base. Then I was non-effective, literally, but I did fly the Magister at angle, so I must have been.
All you were doing was sort of signalling.
Pardon?
All you were doing, that was all.
You're just manning the airfield, so that if any visitors, you give them a green light. But I remember this one morning, waking up, low cloud. Well, you went to work. This caravan was this house, very crude. It had a paraffin heater in it. You went to work, and just when it got daylight, and I remember this day, it was low cloud and drizzling, and out of the murk came this a Liberator. And he landed, and he just taxied round. And I can't remember whether he came to somebody came to me, but he didn't know where he was. He'd come from Gibraltar. I remember them telling me he'd come from Gibraltar, and he was heading for Haverford West. And he was very lucky, really, that he managed to find us, because if he'd been a bit further west, he would have missed us altogether. But he found us, and I told him where Haverford West was, you know, about 30 miles further north, and he took off, and that was the end of it. But that was the only excitement we had, plus the fact that down the road we had a bombing range, and there was a Hudson ploughed in there with the four guys on board. Killed them all, and they were all carted off to Angle sick quarters. And I was pally with the flight sergeant Scott in the sick quarters. It was only a decent place. It was a dispersed camp, only a decent place to get a decent cup of tea. It was terrible. And it was really a miserable period. Actually, it was a very, very grim. But there was a Magister there, which I managed to fly for a few hours.
Did you have any effect on your? Some people, you know, have a bit of trouble if they've had a crash. Were you nervous at all flying the Magister? Or?
No, not the Maggie. No, I was all right with that. That was light aircraft. So I remember I took a passenger to Wittering. Wittering, yeah.
Did you have many flights in the Magister?
Yeah, quite a few. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, about 10 or 12.
And these are just basically jaunts?
Yeah, they were just to Fairwood Common, which is down the road, and Stormy Down, which is down the road, and St. Arthur, they're all in the local area. Bryce Norton, Wittering to Hucknall, engine test. Yeah. And I thought I'd recorded it here somewhere. I flew. Bird Wilson, Wing Commander Bird Wilson, who became, it was a Battle of Britain ace. I flew him in this, I didn't put the passenger down, I flew him up to Wittering, actually. Bryce Norton to Wittering. Yeah.
Now, anything, you seem to have been there till about February 43, so
I was there from
5 or 6 months.
September to October, I'm just turning over the page. September to October was the time at Angle. And I was posted to 61 OTU after that, having regained my medical category.
No, I've got that as February 43 in these notes.
Sorry?
I've got you were in Angle from August 42 to February 43.
Oh, that might have been that would be the posted dates, wouldn't it? That would be. Yes, I'm just looking. Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah. I can tell you the actual dates if I look up the back. You're right, aren't you?
So what happened? What happened when you went? This was
posted. Yeah, from the 24th to the 8th to the 9th to the 2nd.
Right, so that was right. Yeah.
Now, then I was posted to 61 OTU for flying trainer refresher. In that period of time on flying control and messing about, I was only looking at flying log actually. Flying that period of time.
Now, where was 61?
Pardon?
Where was 61 OTU?
Rednall in Shropshire.
Rednall.
Rednall. Rednall. Rednall. Rednall, Shropshire. Not far from Shrewsbury, I think it's that's it. But I only arrived there after that period of angle where I was regraded from non-effective flying to a grade one flying.
So you got your help.
Had to keep going up to was it Kelvin House in MOD to be medically categorised. So having said that, I was sent back to OTU. 61 OTU.
And what were you
March.
Doing there?
Pardon?
What were you doing at 61 OTU?
Well, I was doing a brief refresher flying course, having been off Spitfires for a year, 11 months. So I just did a quick, I don't know how many hours we did, Spitfire. Not much, 15 hours?
Were they the same Spitfires or had they changed?
The Mark II. Yeah, Mark II it was. And Master Flying. Master, that was part of the 15 minutes duel or something, yeah. It's just to...
Did you have any problems? Or?
Yeah, the only problem I had was I couldn't stand the smell of the aircraft. It affected me. I felt nauseated every time I got in the aircraft. So the quack prescribed me a glass of milk and 3 drops of iodine or something silly like that. So I used to sit at lunchtime having my glass of milk and my... But it seemed to wear on. It was just, I suppose, a psychological thing. Plus, you know, aftermath of it. So then I was there in March. March, March now.
It says February here.
Yeah, February, March.
It says February, you're posted to 602 Squadron.
Yeah, I was just going to say. Posted to 621 OTU. From the 9th of Feb to the 24th of March.
Right.
And then I went to... I was posted to 602 Squadron. Which was at that time down near Perranporth, I think.
Where about, sorry?
Perranporth. 60. That's away down near Truro. Is it Truro? Yeah, north of Truro, on the coast somewhere. Yeah, so I duly arrived there.
And you were joining, you were still a sergeant, were you? Still a sergeant. You promoted to flight sergeant.
I was flight sergeant by that time. Yeah. Yeah, I had 114 hours on Spitfires, I see, and 28 hours operational time. I never noticed that before. That was when I arrived at 602 Squadron, the end of the first month. Well, at 602 Squadron at Perranporth, we were flying, I was in... which flight was I in? A flight. Can't remember, can't read the guy's signature. But anyway...
What were your impressions of 602 Squadron when you joined
it? Oh, I liked it very much. A good spirit as I became more proficient. As time progressed, we had a good bunch of guys, actually. Couldn't know less a person, of course, than Klosterman. But just looking...
Was it were they friendly when did they give you a friendly reception?
Oh yeah, I had no problem. One of the peculiarities, this is part of the reason I think, 602 Squadron was a City of Glasgow Auxiliary Squadron, and I think I mentioned early on that my father was in the Auxiliary Air Force. He was in 602 Squadron.
Of course, you did mention it.
And the guys that I knew as a youngster. Who are still on the squadron, but they were now in senior NCO status position. So I had the privilege of A flight of having a flight sergeant fitter and a flight sergeant rigger who knew me when I was about 10 or 12 years of age. So that, I suppose, added to, and I knew one or two of the other guys, you know, in general. And the mere fact that I came from Glasgow and there was a family connection, it seemed to do me quite in good stead, actually. Mm-hmm.